Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. Okay, the numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 trades, hardcovers, graphic novels, etc., as sold through Diamond Comics Distribution to direct market retailers in North America for December 2010. So this officially kicks off, I think, the sixth year's worth of data or whatever I've been talking about on the podcast. And it's funny because a lot's changed and a lot of it is the numbers are getting smaller. I'm not talking about the font size on the Excel file either.
Right. Well, that's kind of one of the things I was just going to ask you, John, really, is, you know, when I look at these numbers and when I read your reports or the other reports that we see on the internet, everybody seems to be thinking that there is a big doomsday coming with comics and not as many people are buying them. But yet, you know, I look at the top comics. And here in the top 300, we have over, 5.5 million comics that have been pre-ordered, right? Am I getting that right? And if you look at, and that's just for the month of December, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at other industries, where do you see that much product being pre-ordered? I mean, the comic industry is nothing like any other industry, and people think that just because there's a drop in 1% or this, that, and the other thing, that the whole comic community is going to collapse when it's not going to collapse.
Well, it depends how you're looking at it. If you're saying, let me clarify. Let me seek to understand on this. Are you saying that the 5.5 million total comics that is more product than a lot of other industries are kicking out, or less?
I think it's a very large number, considering that most people, these are all Diamond pre-orders.
Okay, that's fair. However, if we were to look at similar such numbers for, say, DVDs and or Blu-rays,
right,
we would see a bigger number than this for single items. You know, again, like an Iron Man or an Iron Man 2, or I gotta figure when Tron comes out it'll do well, or Avatar.
Here's the thing, though.
Okay.
Is because Iron Man and Tron have already been in the movie theater, so people have already seen those.
Right.
And people are not really pre-ordering their DVDs 3 months in advance. Some aren't.
No, but we're not looking at end reader figures here either. We're looking at retailers. And
right.
I think that holds true across the board. Now, granted, in bookstores, there's returnability. I don't know about the DVD market specifically.
Right.
But you do have a very valid point of by the time a lot of things, movies that have run through the theaters or TV shows hit DVD, they're a known quantity. They're
right.
Still straight to DVD stuff, and
right.
I don't know what kind of numbers those do.
Right. You don't go out and you pre-order your movie ticket 3 months in advance or even 6 months in advance on the trade paperback side or something like that. I mean, this is product that you are really banking on that it's going to be good based upon the artists and writers and characters that you like.
Well, I think you've got a very valid point there in so much as part of what makes the comic industry unique and something that at times it seems like the publishers just don't get or at least don't leverage or play into is the fact that not only do we have people saying, I want to be getting this title for the foreseeable future, or at least this run of it, or until this guy gets off it, or whatever, and that pre-order mentality, but it's also a habitual sale.
Right.
It is, I like Legion of Superheroes, so I'm going to get it this month, I'm going to get it next month, I'm going to get it the month after, and the month after, and the month after, ad infinitum. And you could argue, well, TV shows, they're going to come back next week for the next episode of, whatever the hot TV show is
right.
today. And that's true, but even a long-running show like, say, Smallville, 10 years, it's over. Stargate, SG-1 went for 10 years.
Right.
Yes, you've got the Law & Order or the CSI, whichever one's gone like 20 or whatever, but those are the rare exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
In the comic stuff, again, it's kind of a odd dichotomy of those that last three or four issues and vanish, and those that last, you know, 70 decades or what, or 7 decades or whatever, you know, 70, 80 years in some of these cases.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that there is that habitual nature of the purchase and the hobby kind of around it and stuff is very different than I think a lot of other markets. But I think, by and large, the comic, and I include both comics themselves, trades, etc. in this too, and the whole manga thing, is a very small kind of a thing compared to certainly either theatrical movies, DVDs,
right,
video games.
Well, that's another thing I wanted to get at. Yeah, I mean, you know, what I started out by saying is it looks like the doldrums for the comics when you look at the comic sales, and they're off by percentages here and percentages there from month to month. But overall, I think that the industry is in a pretty good place considering where we are in television and the movies and also in the gaming industry. I mean, it's pretty good right now. We got it pretty good. And people shouldn't be so quick to judge just because, you know, this month's sales are down doesn't mean it's all going to go in the crapper, you know.
If it was just that sales were down this month, I would agree with you. And I'm trying to think of what all I can say without sounding like one of these doomsayers.
Right.
And I know that at times I come across that way. But, I mean, realistically, looking at the comics, this is like the 9th worst month for the entire pre-order era, which started back in March 2003, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is low. And typically, December is not a bad month for comics. January, usually, crappy. When I first went through and crunched the numbers this time around, I saw the top-selling item below 90,000 units on the comic side, and I'm like, oh, crap, did I mess up?
And that was
like,
for a number one.
And that was the only other, the only item above 77,000.
Yeah, Batman the Dark Knight we're talking about, right?
Yeah, so this is not just G sales were a little weak. The top of the list is way low. And the problem I see is not just, gee, it was a bad month for comics. We've had a couple of those. We're always going to have a couple of those.
Mm-hmm.
The problem I see is systemic in so much as there are major drops on a couple of titles. There are consistent drops on most titles. There is a rotating turnover in titles and stuff. When you've got a new number one for Wolverine topping out well below 60,000 units, that's not a good sign.
And what are we attributing this to, then? Let's kind of break this down.
Well, they're selling comics essentially as if they're trades.
Okay.
Because, you know, we usually talk mainly on the trade side, and they've shifted just in the time we've been talking about it over the last couple of years, the way they package the trades, or the way I'm trying to think of the right word. They used to have volume 1, volume 2, volume 3, and numerical sequence and stuff. Now you look at this list, and sure, you've got a couple that have a very clear volume whatever, Fables, Walking Dead, things like that. You look at, you know, the Batman stuff, or really almost any other title, it seems like, and you've got more standalone naming conventions. The whole numbering system is gone, you know, away for the most part. And I kind of get, oh, gee, they're afraid people aren't going to pick up the first issue, etc. But the habitual nature of the stuff has gone away with that. The fact that everything is getting collected in trade has completely taken away from the immediacy of the need to get it off the comic book rack.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I started reading comics, I either got that issue of All-Star Squadron, New Teen Titans, Legion of Superheroes, or whatever, off the rack, or I did not get it, and I did not read the story, period.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I had a friend who happened to get that copy, and I didn't, and I could borrow his, you know, whatever. But these days, if I don't go pick up a given issue of something, well, it's going to sit on the comic book store shelves for quite some time at some stores. I mean, there are a couple that get it off pretty quick. There are others. I've been able to pick up something that's a year and a half or 3 years old off the new issue rack. Failing that, there's plenty of places online to get it. There are, You know, and that's just for the comic issue. That's not even getting into the fact that by the time it's 3 years old, at the latest, it's been collected, odds are, into a paper, a trade paperback, a hardcover, or maybe something else in addition.
Right.
And now we've got the digital. So the impetus to say, gosh, I see that, I better get that now, gone. They are marketing stuff based on numbering conventions. We've had a bit of a discussion on the comic book page forum on, you know, is the going from the quote-unquote classic numbering, and I've got mixed feelings on that term. It's a good term.
Right.
I just don't want to seem like I'm necessarily endorsing it or condemning it, you know, and it's hard for me not to have a value judgment on that one. The practice, not the term. The term's great.
Mm-hmm.
But going from that classic numbering to a new number one, maybe to a second new number one, maybe even to a third new number one, then going back to the classic numbering, we're now at the point where they have done almost exactly that with Fantastic Four. Classic numbering, new number one for a year, another new number one, cut back to the classic numbering. Now they've announced FF number one, which is yet another new number one, a third. And, because, I mean, yes, it's FF versus Fantastic Four. It's the same title. Come on.
Right, it is, right.
They're going to hit issue 600 in about a year. Do any of us really believe they're not going to flip the numbering back?
Right.
Come on. So that's, to me, a couple of cheap sales ploys, you know, wrapped into one of the, they're going to go for the 600, they're going for the number one, they've had to kill off a character to get all this hype. Is it going to work for them? Sure. No question.
What are they on right now?
586, 587?
586, okay.
I mean, it's almost exactly a year from now when they're going to hit 600.
Okay.
So if FF makes it to issue 15 without going, well, if it makes it to issue 15, I'll be shocked.
All right, wait, so they're stopping the numbering and going with FF?
FF number one, that's in the January solicits.
But Fantastic Four is not solicited.
The death issue or whatever is I think it's
okay.
587, and I could be off by an issue number or two. I think it's officially the last issue of the Fantastic Four.
Okay. Well, see, that's what they kind of did with the Captain America. They threw in that six-issue series, the Wield the Shield thing. Or mm-hmm. I think that's what it was, the six-issue mini, or the Hero Captain America Hero Return or whatever it was.
Well, there was the Heroes. They ended the series. They did the Heroes Reborn for 13 issues, 12 or 13, depending how you count.
Yeah.
Then they went to a new number one. Then after that, they went to another new number one. Then they've gone back to the classic numbering. All of these kinds of tactics, whatever you want to call them, and I've got many non-charitable terms I'm trying not to use here.
Yeah.
There's some people who could say, oh, well, they just need to promote the titles. Yes, they do, and I get that. I'm not going to disagree with that. However, by doing this, now if I say, Chris, gosh, you really ought to go read Captain America number 4, or it was a great issue, I loved it, whatever,
right.
You may go to a comic store or to a convention, you're going to look in the back issue bins, you're going to see Captain America 4, and you're like, wow, this cover sucks, I thought John said it was great.
Right.
But then, about 12 issues later, there'll be another issue number 4, and then a little while later, another issue number 4. Well, which one was I talking about? Does that matter? Well, it ought to.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a matter of time when they get off. I mean, when's Green Lantern going to get back on the numbering system? You know, I think Flash is going to get renumbered.
I think it really comes down to when is a convenient point, which really boils down to when does it hit the next magic, you know, X hundred number.
Who's counting, you know?
And again, how do you count? Do you count from the 350 Barry Allen went, the 200 and something that Wally West did, the 13 or whatever for Bart, the wherever we're 8 or whatever we're at for the current Barry Allen, plus they went back to the Wally West renumbering for a bit.
Right.
So, I mean, they could legitimately do, I forget what that would add up to.
Well, yes. Thor went back to the Journey into Mystery.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, Journey into Mystery didn't have Thor until way in, or Iron Man, you know, or Tales of Suspense, you know, it was way into there when they changed the numbering and everything. So, you know,
but
who knows?
Remember when it used to be that people would say, oh, you've got to go read the Judas contract in New Teen Titans or the Dark Phoenix saga or whatever, you know? And it was not a cheap sales ploy. It was a good story.
Right, right.
And I'm not saying that what they're doing on Fantastic Four is not going to be a good story. I mean, Hickman is knocking it out of the park,
mm-hmm.
at least as far as I'm concerned. But They've been doing so many things like that. Marvel refuses to be reasonable on the price point, staying at $3.99 on a lot of things. This whole .1 program, I think, is a huge, huge tactical mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only are they taking their more expensive books and then saying, but if you really want to understand it or jump on, here's another $2.99 we want you to spend this month.
Mm-hmm.
So not $3.99, it's now $3.99 plus $2.99. It's like, well, that's kind of backwards if you're trying to get people excited about a lower price to charge them first, entice them to spend more.
Mm-hmm.
But it also is sending the signal that every other issue of their book that doesn't have a .1 is a horrible place to jump on to.
Oh, I didn't think about that. You're absolutely right.
It's bad enough we tend to have a part 1, 2, 3, 4 of X on the cover. I mean, I've said for years that that is a disincentive to get somebody to buy something. Well, why should I come in on the middle?
Well,
they're compounding that with this.
It's the same thing with what's going on with Daredevil. I mean, you know, they do what they did with Shadowland, which is fine. They retitle it with Black Panther, and now it looks like a new Daredevil series is going to be coming out.
Which is exactly what they did over on the Hulk title with Hercules and...
Yeah, you can't keep that thing straight.
It's essentially, it's not a backdoor pilot. In TV terms, a backdoor pilot is you use an existing episode of an existing show, or an episode of an existing show, I should say, to introduce a new character to get around the, can I get the network to spring for the money to go film a pilot? You just use the budget on another show to essentially do that, have your regulars essentially guest star in their own show as somebody else takes center stage. So this technique is not really a backdoor pilot, but it's a... it's not even a bait and switch. I'm not quite sure what the right term would be, but it's, hey, we've got this series. It'd be like if Aquaman took over Smallville and Clark Kent started starring in Metropolis or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, that would have been one way to get Aquaman his own show.
Right, right.
But they're using too many of these cheap sales techniques. They're leeching the power out of them. It's not a great economy. And I think that factors in. I don't know that it's a predominant force because there's so many of these other things that have been operating for decades to really get us to the point we're at now.
Right.
And, you know, if you look on the trade paperback list here, you know, by the time we're out of the top 30 items this month, we're below 2,000 units. So only statistically speaking, if these sales were split evenly across every store... And we know they are not, but theoretically, if they were, that means only the top 25 or maybe 30, depending how many stores you think are out there, got a copy of some of these books. I mean, only the top 30 or whatever are at every store, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Everything below that, it's going to be harder to find these books. So there are a ton of, I think, sales myths going around, and one of them is, well, they'll make up for it in trade. Oh, well, they're not doing that in the direct market. Well, they must be doing it in the mass market. No, they're really not doing that, too. And I'm sure we'll be seeing the year-end numbers, or I hope we'll see the year-end numbers from BookScan soon, if they're not out already. At least I haven't seen them yet. And that usually puts to rest the, oh, things are selling terrifically outside of the mass market. Or in the mass market, I should say, outside of the direct market. There will be some Walking Dead, Superman Earth 1, probably a few others that will do exceedingly well in the mass market, but the average trade? Nah, not really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to do okay there, but again, we're looking at a mass market that is having some serious troubles in and of itself. You know, Borders is stopped paying some of its suppliers. That's causing, you know, a ripple effect within that industry. You know, are they going to be able to, you know, get bought out by somebody else, solidify their position? It's ironic that one of the best things they may do for the comic industry would be to file for bankruptcy, which would probably allow them to allocate whatever funds they've got towards paying their suppliers, i.e. publishers,
mm-hmm.
just to keep getting new material. So it's one of those things that anyone who thinks that the industry is just doing gangbusters, it's really healthy and so forth, I'm sorry, it's not. You know, and I know that's kind of counter to the direction you were heading in there, but it's one of those things that I don't think the problem is, gee, December was weak. It's that we're seeing weak sales consistently. And I think if they made stories more accessible, if they positioned them better, in other words, didn't have so many redundant titles in some cases. I mean, do we need three Avenger titles right now? Maybe we do, maybe we don't. It depends who you ask. Do we need four Deadpool titles right now? I'm liking them, but no, we probably don't. You know, they are treating marketing as an afterthought. Really, I think the marketing and editorial people need to have a bit more of a synergistic kind of a outlook on life and work together to be creating easier-to-sell titles that they can market then better and more effectively.
I guess I'm just trying to go for the glasses half full angle. And yeah, you know, I do see that the percentages are down and off, but you know, when I look at the other mediums, when I, you know, The Cape just came out the past week and it got pretty good ratings. The Walking Dead is doing gangbusters. Smallville is good once again. It's going to be a blockbuster summer, you know, this summer and next summer too. And, you know, the DC Universe Online game just hit, and everybody's going gaga over that, you know. And I just think that, you know, overall, I think, you know, things are headed in the right direction for once.
Well, I certainly think there's a ton of opportunity because comics have been widely accepted and culturally accepted to a degree that is just unbelievable. You know, the whole concept of I mean, people are aware of what Comic-Con is.
Right.
Whether they read comics or not, a personal way I can kind of say just to what level comics are, you know, culturally accepted or whatever. A company I'm at recently moved to a new office. They decided to theme it as quote unquote industrial comic book, and I was a little confused as to quite what they meant. But I mean, there are comic book posters up all around the place.
That's pretty cool.
It's incredibly cool. Now, part of it is the whole, hey, everyone's a superhero at their job, that kind of a thing or whatever. I mean, it plays into the company culture in many ways. I mean, a lot of the company culture is based around 300, the movie, the comic, you know, take your pick, the story at the very least. I mean, that's a central thing to the company culture. I almost certainly own more comic books than the rest of the company put together. So it's not like there's this huge, oh, wow, everyone's buying comics, but there's some interest in it, there's awareness of it, there's an acceptance of it, it's cool. Nobody's going down the hall thinking that poster of the, I guess it was Justice League 7 cover, where they had the two or three parts during the, I guess it was the Meltzer run. You know, nobody's walking by that thinking, why is that up there, that's so stupid or anything, or at least not that I've heard. I would hope they're not saying that. I mean, the only complaint I've really heard was on the Captain America white poster, and that was me complaining, gosh, I think they should get more than one issue or two issues out to put a poster out.
They had this preview issue out years ago.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But I mean, yeah, it's one of those things where people are aware of comics, comics are cool, Smallville 10 years, Walking Dead, widely accepted. I mean, the
Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang
Even
Theory.
Though that show is, I can't stand it, but people, you know, it gets the Green Lantern t-shirts out, you know, that's for sure. So
it does. It makes comic culture more accessible and understandable to people.
Yeah.
And that's cool. I mean, there's a huge potential upside to all of this. I mean, the Colbert Report still has Captain America's shield up on the wall.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
So could all of these numbers completely turn around? Yeah. I mean, the upside here is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it would take one half of 1% of the people who bought the Iron Man DVD or Blu-ray to pick up the next issue of, well, really in December, any comic to double it in sales almost, or at least, you know, shoot it up. I guess not double it in sales, but 1%. Anyways. To make a huge statistical difference in the sales.
Right.
Now, is that suddenly going to happen? No. Could it happen? Well, I mean, there's a lot of people out there. A lot of people who are excited about the Green Lantern movie, or, you know, the Thor movie, or the Avengers movie, or the next Batman movie, or whatever it's going to be. So, the opportunity exists. if it could be correctly tapped into with the right property, the right marketing people, whatever. And I'm not trying to make it sound like that's simple. It is not. But it wouldn't take a whole lot to really turn these numbers around.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to see that happen. Because believe me, it's no fun looking at these numbers every month thinking, oh crap, how am I going to make it sound like it's not doom and gloom?
Right, right.
You know, when it, this month, I again, like I said, I saw that top selling number and I'm like, oh crap, this can't be right. Double checked it. Yeah, it is. Sent the numbers over to Comic Book Resources and got an email back of, are you sure about this? Which, hey.
Jonah is going to fire you. That can't be right.
Not so much that, but he did exactly what he should have.
Yeah.
He saw that, like, Avengers had a 25% drop, and he's like, wait a sec, I got to double check this. And I completely applaud him for doing that. Right move. I encourage him to continue doing that. I can make mistakes.
Right.
This didn't turn out to be one of them. What had happened on that Avengers title is it had a ton of variant covers last month, not so much this month. It deeply saddens me that because Avengers 7, among other variant covers, had one of those blank variants.
Oh, yeah.
It shot through the roof sales-wise compared to the other issues of that title. So yeah, when you see a 25% drop in a key book over at Marvel from issue to issue, it makes sense to question the numbers, you know. But it's really hard at times for me to put a positive spin on this stuff because it's going downhill.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think that's doom and gloom? All the industry's about to keel over? No, I mean the thing to look at is while the comic sales are not doing great, they're rotating titles enough to keep certain things up, which is why I never do a comparison of how the list does from month to month to month for the most part. I mean, obviously we've talked about it being the seventh worst on the comic side, whatever. The fallacy with that, more so on the comic side, a little less so on the trade side, the contents of the list change every month. So all you're doing is taking the lower ones, they're getting either pushed out the list or canceled, and new high-selling things come on the list. You know, if you were to take 300 people in a football stadium and line them up by height, and then every couple of minutes take, 50 of them, throw them out, and line the next people up by... Or take the short 50 and line the next people up by height. By the time you're done, you're going to have the 300 tallest people in the stadium.
Right.
You know, that's just the way that works. Same thing here, that the better-selling ones tend to survive longer than the lower-selling ones because they're not as profitable. So it's one of those things that you could look at certain chunks of the list and say, oh, this looks better or whatever. It's like you could spin this however you want. I just like to think that because of the acceptance and success of the movies, the television shows, the video games, these publishers have different revenue streams. That means they are not, they are reliant, but not to the point of if they have a really bad month, some of these, obviously smaller publishers, but some of these publishers have a bit more of a fudge factor, a bit of breathing room because of these other revenue streams that they didn't used to have.
Sure.
It used to be to the point where you have a couple of bad months of comics, some of these smaller publishers are on the edge, and man, that could really put them out of business. Now, a lot, certainly not all, but a lot of these have movie deals, book deals, video game deals, toy deals, whatever. And that's great. I mean, I like being able to take a property that I've loved as a comic and watch it on TV or whatever. I mean, I watched the Young Justice pilot or whatever.
I haven't seen that yet, but I've been watching. I've been watching the Avengers one. I really like the Avengers.
I haven't watched the Avengers one. I need to do that. But, I mean, that's the kind of thing. I like the Avengers. I want to see them on TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I like Walking Dead. Personally, I don't want to see that on TV. A little gory. I don't like the gore looking that realistic. That's just me. Other people are loving that series.
It's good.
It's cool to be able to see something translate from one medium to another and just, you know, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Both in terms of entertainment and in terms of additional revenue streams for these publishers. So It's one of those things, though. I did look at the numbers this month, much more so on the comic side, because, again, this was out of the 95 months of the Final Order era. December 2010 ranked 86 out of 95 in terms of the best month. So it was the ninth worst month. Last month was the seventh worst month, so it ranked 88 out of that. So, I mean, we've had, in the last 5 months, three of the worst months, but not the three worst months. I want to be clear on that, for comics. Now, you look on the trade side, however, you get a bit of a different picture, because we've actually had some really strong months on the trade side.
Right.
Now, out of that same 95, now, I want to be clear on this. The numbers I'm going to tell are going to be misleading and skewed towards the more recent months, and I'll talk about that in a sec. This was the 17th highest month on the trade side. Last month was the 11th, followed by the 8th and the 9th going back. But keep in mind, how many items are on the list these days? 300.
Right.
How many used to be on the list? A hell of a lot less.
Right.
about 2 years ago, it was 100. Prior to that, it was 50. Going further back, it got down to 10, although I'm trying to remember off the top of my head if that was during the pre-order era or not. I think that might have been during the pre-order, not the final order era.
Was this our first full calendar year of 300? I think it was.
I don't know if I have that
information. Yeah, it's no big deal.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Because it was a November cutover or whatever, I think. I'm thinking we might have had it all of 2009, but I'm not sure.
Okay. It's neither here nor there.
Yeah. But again, on the trade side, because we've got the list length growing over time, obviously the more recent months are going to do better just because there were more items.
Right.
And I don't have in front of me that kind of segmented down just to the top 100 or whatever. But it's one of those things that, you know, we're actually moving more units on, or more dollars, I should say, not units, more dollars on the trade side than the comic side, to which I'm sure somebody listening is saying, well, duh, they cost more. Well, yeah, they do. But, I mean, the average of the price for the top 300 items was around $20, a little over, versus on the comic side, you know, we total up the price of the top 300 and we get, we'll say, $375. So, yeah, a bit of a difference. But if we also average the sales of the top comics, we wind up with about 18,548. So we'll say, again, you know, about, we'll say 18,000. We'll go a little low. We do that same thing on the trade side, and we're at about 1,100, a little under. So the difference in price versus the difference in sales, you know, it's one of those things that comics cost a little, obviously, you know, noticeably less or whatever, but there's just so many of them that are selling gangbusters.
Right.
Compared to, really, it's a fairly flatter sales curve on the trade side. You know, you get a lot of things that are below that 1,000 mark. A matter of fact, nearly two-thirds of the list is under 1,000 units each. So it's always a little hard to kind of compare the comics and the trades lists. You know, and we'll obviously do some of this once I get around to crunching the year-end numbers and talking about that stuff.
Yeah, that'll be fun to go over, I think, this season.
Yeah, definitely.
We want to move on to the books themselves.
Let's talk about the breakdown quickly.
Oh, okay, yeah.
DC Comics had about 28% of the units in dollars. Marvel had about 17.5% of the units, almost 22% of the dollars. Image had 15.5% of the units, a little over 14% of the dollars. And Dark Horse had 11.7% of the units, 10.7% of the dollars. IDW only had a little over 4% of the units and 4.85 of the dollars.
They had half of what Dark Horse and Image published.
Yeah.
Too. So that didn't. It was a slow month for IDW.
Yeah. But it was one where, you know, a lot of the other publishers, you know, in the premier section did pretty well. Only 68 items for DC this time around, only 59 for Marvel. What I found interesting is half of the sales, almost exactly, but a little over half the sales by dollars and about 54.25% by units were non-Marvel DC. So it was a good month for the other publishers this time around on the trade side.
All right.
Now, top-selling trade this time around, Fables 14 did 12,014 estimated units, which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Total known sales of Volume 13 is up around 18,265. So this is, it's not a drop, but this is a difference of about 34.22% of that. So, you know, Fables usually shows up again and again on the list. It's going to make up the 6,251 units over time, no doubt. I mean, the advantage 13 has, it's been out for, what, 6 months or whatever. So that always gives the previous volume a huge advantage on the trade side.
All right.
We've got some reorder activity in the next two slots. We've got 7,531 units of Superman Earth 1, the hardcover, bringing its total known sales in the direct market to 31,805 units. Now, it's interesting because it's taken it a couple of months to get there, and if you look at how Superman is doing over on the comics side, it is doing 43,028 units with 706. So that's kind of the end of what would have been the first six-issue arc by Straczynski if he'd actually done all six issues, which he hadn't, but that's another issue.
Right.
So even a story arc on the comic side that I think a lot of people are saying is moving at a snail's pace, because it is.
Because he's walking.
Yeah. We'll say it's averaging about 50,000 units. And then you look at the trade there for the Earth 1 at, you know, a little under 32,000 units. Big difference in volume there and stuff.
Right.
Now, $20 price tag versus, you know, those six issues did, let's see, they were $2.99 a piece, so we'll say $3. So it really comes down to comparing $18 to $20 and, what, $18,000 unit difference. So do the math. It's one of those things that we're not quite at the point where a series of hardcovers is really going to be financially more profitable, I think, than the ongoing comic series. But it is giving it a bit of a run for its money, so, I mean, hey, I enjoyed Superman Earth 1. I had some issues with it, but it was a fun story.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see a second volume, so go Straczynski on that. Because that Superman's not just pacing the USA. Next up in rank 3, we've got reorder activity of the first volume of the Walking Dead trade paperback. It has been on the list 69 times before. This time it did another 6,410 units. Its total known sales within the direct market are 140,942 estimated units. And it has probably done more than that, given how long it's been out.
Right.
It's probably had a couple of more months. It just didn't make the cut in terms of the top list or whatever. So, interesting stuff. We also have the first hardcover for Brightest Day, rank 4, 5,239 units. So, you know, we're already four ranks in, and we're getting close to that 5,000 mark.
Right.
We've got another one at rank 5 there with the fourth volume of the Planetary trade paperback, which is just a hair's breadth beneath.
Yeah, one unit. That's funny.
Yeah. Now, it used to be that we would not have been able to really see that difference, but due to a couple of things on the number crunching process and whatnot, we've got a bit more visibility into the resolution there. So that one unit difference is you know, I think very interesting in terms of it really wouldn't have taken much for it to flip the other way around.
Right.
So, but those are the only things to sell above 4,000 units. So five items, that's it.
Yeah, that's pretty weak.
It is what it is. I mean, it's one of those things that five items did that. Two of them reorder activity. Fables, really no surprise, it topped the list. It did nearly twice as well as you know, the other items, which, again, is... It's a little disheartening because, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Fables. I think it's great. But, you know, it took, like, the bottom 28 items or whatever, 28, 29, to total up to those level of sales.
Well, it also proves the point that this waiting for the trade mentality may not be there.
Oh, I think it's there, just not the way you probably mean it.
Right, right.
I think people are waiting for the trade, and when the trade comes out, they're still waiting.
They're still waiting, right.
I mean, I obviously you meant it as people waiting for the trade and then buying it when it comes
out. Buying it, right, yeah.
For Fables, I think that happens. For Walking Dead, I think that happens. For a few other things, obviously Planetary did fairly well.
You think they're doing it for the boom, Irredeemable and Incorruptible? Because that seems to be selling well both in the comics and in the trades.
You know, it's hard to say because Irredeemable showed up at the rank 11 here with the trade paperback, and it did 3,071 units, and, you know, those are really good sales.
Right. Incorruptible is at rank 21.
Yeah, and that did 2,223 units, which, again, not bad sales.
Right.
Both of those are at the every store may have gotten a copy level. But on the comic side, I really think that those are getting supported fairly well there, too. That's one where I think it is entirely possible there may be some people double-dipping on that because they like it. I mean, it's solid stuff. Irredeemable used to be the top-selling item over at Boom, by and large. The first issue of Starborn kind of beat it out. With the Stan Lee stuff, but it'll be interesting to see where those titles kind of shake out over time, because Irredeemable, at 20 issues in, still selling over 10,000 units by a wide margin. On the comic side, 10,406 to be you know, a little more precise, or at least as precise as an estimate can be, because there is some wiggle room in that. So I don't think people are... Well, let me rephrase. I think there are people that are waiting in getting Irredeemable and Incorruptible in trade. It's obviously got a strong following there, because these are not that much lower, only really a couple hundred units lower than the previous volume.
Right.
So that shows, even though it's still about an 11 or 14% drop, it shows that a lot of people who are getting it in trade are getting it quickly in trade. So I would say that's grounds to believe, yes, there are people waiting for the trade, but in the sense you meant it of, it comes out, they buy it, they read it. Hopefully they read it. But it's not eating into the monthly sales to a detrimental level. Because it's, I mean, for a Boom book, those are selling really well on both sides.
I'm still waiting to see if we're going to get hardcovers of these.
You see, and that goes back to the whole waiting for the trade that I was talking about. Because the publishers have trained us to wait for whatever we think is the ideal format.
Well, I'm getting these in trade.
Okay.
Both of these. But okay. I'm just saying, you look at Marvel, you look at DC, hardcover, trade paperback, hardcover, whichever way they decide to publish it. But with these two titles at Boom, it's been strictly trade paperbacks.
I think that's a smart move. I think they're giving people too many options for how to go get some of this stuff.
Right.
And I think if they were to, they being any publisher, do a decently high-profile enough series. In other words, something people are legitimately going to want to buy anyway. It's not necessarily a top-selling event book, but not a Big Hero 6 or something, kind of a who-are-they-again title. If they were to just say, hey, we're going to put this out, we're not going to collect it. Cynical right. audience that we are, of course, is going to say, yeah, you say that now. There's no way they could stick to their guns on that, because sooner or later somebody else will be in power, somebody else will make the decision and say, hey, this has never been collected, that's a gold mine, let's do that. You know, it's like, okay, I get that. It's
well,
annoying.
I've got something along those same lines that I want to talk about a little later on.
Okay.
So I'll wait.
Rounding out the next two slots, we've got volumes 13 and 2 of Walking Dead. 13 did 3,850. 2 did 3,775. This goes back to how we've talked before on how some of these have a like a V-shaped curve in any given month for a series of trades, where the ones near the beginning and the ones near the end do the best. It tapers off as you get to some midpoint in the middle where it's almost the pivot point. I just find those kinds of things very interesting, because there's some people who are clearly starting at the beginning, some who are current, and some that are just kind of catching up in the middle or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Rank 8, we got the second volume of Sweet Tooth. It did 3,760 units. And then rank 9, we've got Star Wars Clone Wars. This is, I think, the Young Readers version. Volume 6, 3,498 units. That's another one that I could see doing well in the direct market.
Yeah.
And then the hardcover for Superman Secret Origin at 3,475 units.
Did you pick that up?
Yeah. Well, I picked up the series, not the hardcover.
Did they change his origin major, like from the John Byrne stuff, or is it just like a retelling?
Yes. It's a little of both, because
Okay.
They put Superboy kind of sort of back into play.
Okay.
In other words, there were aspects, it's more the classic stuff. I mean, it violates a little bit of year one, or the
Byrne Man of
Steel. Man of Steel, thank you. And the, what was the Mark Waid one?
Oh, Earthright? Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that was just, what, 2-3 years ago, right?
Yeah. So, you take those two, you take the original kind of origin stuff. This is kind of a melding of all of them, trying to make sense. It puts the Legion kind of back into play a lot better. It's got a very bit of a Smallville vibe at times, but very much a Christopher Reeve visual in a really great way.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun. It's worth reading.
Okay.
And it's one of those, if you hated the original Superman film, you might not like this, because it's got kind of that sensibility to it.
Okay.
But personally, I thought that was the right approach to take with this.
I'm going back and rereading, for the first time, all my Golden Age Superman archives.
Oh, should be fun.
So I'm gonna. That's my little thing that I'm gonna be doing for the next year. So there's what 13, 15 archives of Golden Age Superman that I'm gonna get done. So it should be a lot of fun.
Cool. Should be good. Let's see. Let's jump down a little to rank 17.
All right.
We've got Uncanny X-Men Birth of Generation Hope trade paperback, 2,301 units. Anyone who read Generation Hope number 1 and wondered what the hell is going on, such as Bob, and very reasonably so, this is the first story arc that should have been Generation Hope, but it was in Uncanny X-Men instead. This goes back to one of the many things I was talking about earlier on how they're not selling comics well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got number one issues that aren't accessible. Let's see, what else do we have in here that looks interesting? Down at rank 51, we've got Mystery Society Volume 1 trade paperback. It did an even 1,500 from IDW. That was pretty good stuff.
Now, what is the Mystery Society?
That is a Steve Niles 5-issue series of basically quirky adventurers, if you will.
Okay.
It's a little hard to describe and do justice to. The artist was... Oh, I'm blanking on the artist's name. I'm completely blanking on the artist. It's a known artist. Great looking stuff, too. It's not like a supernatural horror kind of a thing, as one might expect from Steve Niles. Again, okay. It was more of a... modern day, I don't say Doc Savage kind of a thing, but you've got a group, they've got some supernatural powers, they're really different sorts of characters.
Huh, okay.
Check it out the next time you're at a comic store.
They're all brand new characters?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Let's see.
I will definitely check that one out, yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Bob was a big fan of it, too. So, and it did pretty well in, you know, a trade, you know, for a new property. And then it ranks 53, 60, and 62. We got a couple of masterworks. We got the Golden Age Marvel Comics Volume 5 at rank 53, 1,442. The Defenders Marvel Masterwork Volume 2 at rank 60 with 14,005, and then the Marvel Team-Up Volume 1 at 1,391 units, down at rank 62.
That Marvel Team-Up is the 150th Marvel Masterwork, by the way.
Huh. Did not know that.
Yeah.
Now, how many issues of Marvel Team-Ups does that cover?
Oh, probably the first 10, I think.
All right.
Yeah. Usually it's 10 or 12.
Now, I don't really follow the trades anywhere near as closely as you do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the DC side, this would have been an archive. They've kind of changed all that to whatever they're doing now.
Right.
But then they would have the Showcase Presents equivalent, which would be an essential on the Marvel side.
Right.
But then on the DC side, they would have the Chronicles, where they would do essentially a fraction of a Showcase or half of an archive in color. Does Marvel have something like that?
Well, the Chronicles are all the Golden Age with a little bit of Silver Age. You got Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman, and then you've got the Flash and Green Lantern,
right,
the Silver Age. So the only thing that I would equate to it would be the Marvel Classic,
the Invaders and stuff.
Yeah, the Invaders, and they did, or trade paperbacks of like the NOM or something like that. They're just basic, the trade paperbacks, colored trade paperbacks.
Right, right. Okay.
So there's really no equivalent,
I'm just wondering if there's somewhere I could pick up the first dozen or so Marvel Team-Up issues in a color trade I'm not going to pay $55 for a hardcover. That's just me, though.
For a color trade, no. I don't think so.
Yeah. For a while, I was getting a lot of showcases and essentials. But I've really pulled back on that big time.
Mm-hmm. If you really want to read them, I'm sure you can find them online somewhere.
I've got from I think issue 10 or something up.
Do you?
Yeah. So some of those are good things. Now, another one from IDW I want to talk about real quick is down at rank 169. Star Trek Burden of Knowledge, Volume 1 trade paperback. Classic Trek type stuff. Fun story. 727 units. I find this disappointing.
Yeah, that's real disappointing.
Because I know there are more Star Trek fans out there that would have enjoyed this.
Yeah.
I get why it's doing that, but you know what I mean.
No, I know. I'm a big Star Trek fan too, as you know, and it's very disappointing to see that it's just, some stuff gets an audience. Like we talked about the Dr. McCoy one. That is a pretty good series, but then you get something like this, and I don't know why it just doesn't seem to sell,
I think the McCoy one had the advantage of John Byrne doing the art.
That definitely helps. You're absolutely right.
So there's some name recognition. There's some fans there. So what else did you want to talk about that was lower on the list?
Well, real quick, we talked about having something and then have it getting republished a little bit later, for the hardcovers and the trade paperbacks and everything. And if you look at rank 256... for $99.95 from Humanoids, we've got the Mobius Inkle Classic Collection, the deluxe version hardcover. And what's interesting about this book is we only have an estimated sales of 462 units, but Humanoids only produced 750 copies of this book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when this book was talked about a few months ago, and it was kind of delayed, and they finally brought it out in December, and this book flew off the shelves. And if you go look for it on Amazon right now in the marketplace, you can find this brand new copy for $230. Or if you go on to eBay, one just sold for $186.
Wow.
So, it's kind of disheartening when companies do this, for whatever reason, and they make a limited edition. A few retailers see this in the previews book or see the, read the blogs and see that this is going to be a pretty big seller, and they go out and they buy them just to resell them under a different name, on eBay or Amazon or whatever. And it's a bummer for us people out there that really want to read this stuff. Because it's so hard to find in the original form, and there's been no really good collection of this great Mobius work, you know? So, yeah, but, you know, you look on the Humanoids website, and all it says is that, you know, hardcover, first time, original colors, 750 copies, pretty much get it now, you know? And what I have come to find out, John, that this is going to be re-released into a trade paperback, a much more affordable trade paperback, later on this calendar year.
That makes sense.
So should Humanoids, or any company really, let us know that they're going to be doing something like that? Like, what's good about Image, you know, that they've done with their Spawn collections of recent, you know, they do the trade paperback, they do the hardcover, and then they do a signed and limited edition hardcover. And they tell you right up front in the solicitations, you know, why couldn't Humanoids have done something like this? Where, well, hey, we're going to have a limited edition. If you want to get it, this is the order code. But for those other people, here is the trade paperback, and you can pre-order that now.
I mean, should they do that? I think, yes, they should, mm-hmm. both in terms of I would prefer that, and ethically, I think that's kind of the more upfront and right way to do things.
Exactly, the ethics that's come into it, right.
But ethically, there's nothing inherently wrong about them not making that information available up front. They may not have decided originally that's what they wanted to do.
True.
And by releasing that information, they would be undercutting some of their sales. And of course, their job is to sell as much as they can, to a degree, however they can. So, do I think it would behoove them in the long run? I think it would, because you wind up with less people feeling burned of, well, I got this because they said it was, or implied it was going to be the only way, but I could have gotten it at a better price. I'd have been happier. I mean, really, right. The bottom line is you want happy customers.
Well, and you don't want to piss off your fan base by releasing this for $99, having to go out and buy it for $180 off of eBay, and then find out the next day that, oh, yeah, by the way, we're going to have a, you know, $39.95 trade coming out of this same stuff later on.
Yeah.
Now, also, the other thing about the signed and limited edition is, you know, there's usually a bunch more extras, like 20 extra pages of artwork or, you know, commentary by the author or whatever. And that's fine, you know, but if they want to, quote unquote, dumb down the collection and just strip all the extras out and just put the comics into a trade, I've got no problem with that. You want more, you got to pay more kind of thing. You know?
I do have a problem with that.
You do have a problem with that.
I really don't like it when certain extra features are only available in the Uber Deluxe Expensive Edition or whatever, or even just in the trade, because as somebody who has been supporting some of this material in the monthly format or the periodical format and, you know, helping pay for the content creation costs, mm-hmm. to be missing out on those extra features because I don't want to double dip and go buy the whole thing again.
Right. Well, that's what the Dark Tower series is doing. You know, they've got all those prose pieces in the back of the comics. They're not collected in the trade paperbacks and hardcovers.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty neat thing for Marvel to do, you know, in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, I mean, there are pros and cons to every decision they make on this. The one company I would look at right now and say, you want some ideas on some good ways to do collected editions? I'm going to point to Top Cow. Now, not across the board, because I think some of the stuff they're doing, it's like, really? You've got to be kidding me. But specifically, the first look trade paperback they did, 6 number one comics, $4.99 cover price.
Right.
Brilliant idea. Some of the...
Underselling that, though, sometimes? Are you underselling your product by having it so cheap?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, because I just read through that not too long ago for the Weekly Comic Spotlight. We're going to talk about Echo, which I hadn't gotten, or Echoes, I should say, plural. But I had the trade, and it's like, oh, I'll just read that. I would not have read Echoes otherwise. I would have gotten Genius. Really, that's about the only one I can guarantee I would have gotten out of the five, or out of the six. Out of it, though,
okay.
I'll probably pick up Black Vault. Two of the others, not my cup of tea, but it at least got me to read them all.
Right.
So I felt I got a heck of a lot of value out of the cost of that trade. It got the material in front of me, which they would not have done otherwise. And they're making the first issues available as solo stuff, so if you didn't get the trade or whatever, they're trying to be fair all the way around. But you also look at how they've got some of the first jump-on volumes of, I think it's Witchblade and maybe The Darkness, at a $4.99 cover price for a six-issue thing. Are they underselling it? Well, yeah, but they're also using that as an entry ramp to get people into the material to where they'll buy the other stuff.
Right.
We're seeing the same thing with the $9.99 price on the first Walking Dead trade. We see the same thing on a lot of Vertigo trades. There is a lower the barrier to entry aspect to this that makes a lot of sense.
I guess, you know, I guess for me is when you're selling a six-issue trade for $4.99, you wonder where you could, you wonder if you could have sold as many copies for $6.99. You know, where's your point of no return on that, something like that, you know?
I don't think it's a matter of point of no return. I think it is a matter of a loss leader, and doing it at the $4.99 cover price really puts it within arm's reach of a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And
unlike the DC Presents at $7.99.
There is that. Yeah. Psychologically, it's under $5. I mean, I can give you a $5 bill. I can get the thing, maybe get some change depending on sales tax. But
right.
The point is, it feels inexpensive. It's a, what the hell, I'll do that.
Right.
It, again, gets the person into the material. And even if you break even, maybe even lose a little bit on that trade, and they're not going to be losing money, that would just be bad. Because really, for like the Witchblade stuff or whatever, they've already paid for the content creation. Less so on the first look. That I thought was a big risk. But you're going to make up for that on the future sales. I mean, if they get everyone who picked up that first look trade paperback to buy one of those series they wouldn't have otherwise gotten, that's a win.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big win. So I really think they should do that for like the pilot season stuff, whatever. I mean, they're doing some interesting stuff in how they're packaging their books. And they're doing it in a way that shows some marketing savvy that I'm not really feeling like we get out of some of the other publishers.
Why can't we get that from a major publisher?
Really, major publisher comes down to, why can't we get a $4.99 book?
Yeah.
Because somebody would have to stick their neck out to support that decision, championing it in the company and say, this is a good idea. And the bean counters, because these are companies big enough to have professional bean counters, are going to say, but look at how these things do. Where do we get the...
But give me Shadowland at $4.99.
Why?
Yeah, I mean, well, maybe you'll sell, you know, 10,000 more copies or something like
that. So you're doing it at a roughly break-even point.
Right.
However,
that's kind of what my original question was. Right, where do you... Where is your point of no return? Where's your law of diminishing returns? Where is it?
The benefit on this is not on that item. It's on the subsequent ones in the series.
Right.
Doing the first volume of a Fables at a low, low cost to get people into the book, great idea. You know, really at this point, you know, it doesn't make sense for Kirkman to lower the price on the first Walking Dead. However, it might on Invincible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those that you've got to have enough material after it to benefit from getting people on board on that.
Right.
But you've also got to balance not having it be such a price difference between the first and second volume that people say, well, I liked it, but I don't like it $17.99 worth, or some other kind of pushback like that.
Well, that's why I'm thinking of like a limited series or something like that.
But again, if you do like a Shadowland and put that out at a entry-level price, what do you get the benefit on after that? There's not like a Shadowland 2 volume coming
right
out, you know?
Well, maybe they can jump on board Black Panther, Man Without Fear, or something like that.
Maybe they would, yeah. But there's not that second sale that makes that much sense.
Right. I'm looking at the list right now at rank 225 with the another trade paperback of Kingdom Come. You know? Sitting there at $17.99, why not for 1 month throw that on sale for $9.99 or something like that?
And that's not a bad thing to move some merchandise.
Yeah.
But I push back with what would be the benefit on sacrificing your profit on a title like that for a month permanently, whatever duration, doesn't matter.
Right.
Where is your second sale?
Right.
Whereas if you go with something else that's got follow-on sales, and I'm trying to think, we've got rank, volume 10 at rank of Ex Machina down at rank 243.
Mm-hmm.
If they were to take the first volume of that and do that at a lower cost to get people onto the series, you got nine mm-hmm. other volumes to benefit from. You know, you could jumpstart people into a title that way.
Right.
But you've got to have those subsequent volumes to do that. You've got to have a story that pulls people across the volumes. Whereas a lot of times, and this goes back to, you have storylines that get their own trades and not a part one, not a volume one, volume two kind of a. Suppose somebody gets at rank 201 that Old Man Logan trade paperback and they love it. Where do they go next?
Right.
Don't know. Not so clear. Some may go here, some may go there. So
I guess that all goes back to what we were talking about at the top of the show is, you know, how do you push more product? How do you be more creative with your marketing and the product that you sell?
Well, and do you have an exit plan for your readers?
Exactly.
When they exit this, where do they go?
Right.
And Shadowland actually had a decent one. It launched Heroes for Hire, or it set the scene
mm-hmm.
tour when Heroes for Hire got launched, which really it could have been launched without Shadowland whatsoever.
Right.
But it had gotten people thinking about those character ends. Hey, I really like Iron Fist. Gosh, it's kind of cool to see this. Oh, wait, here's another title I can go read them in. Cool. You know, Shadowland did not launch Black Panther.
No.
It sort of set the scene, but really you could have done the Black Panther cutover just as easily without it.
Said back to our pilot. Black Panther is going to get a series one way or another.
But they at least had something to where people coming out of Shadowland felt like they had a few things they could go to.
Yeah.
They could go to Black Panther, they could go to Heroes for Hire, they could go to the Daredevil Reborn series. And having those kinds of exit paths and the ability to pull readers from one thing into another without feeling like they're getting, you know, lifted up and just crammed into this other area, it's tricky.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can do that, you can really kind of expand your readership. You can cross-sell effectively, but the trick is not to cross-sell too forcefully. And really, I think that's one of the other things we did not talk about at the top of the show, which is contributing to the lower sales, is a lot of it has been over cross-sold. I get a ton of books from Marvel and DC. If for some reason I stop buying them, I get bored, I go broke, I get hit by a bus, I die of old age, whatever, they lose one customer, they lose a noticeable amount of comic sales. Arguably, they might have been better off if all the comics I were buying were across, you know, 15, 20 different people.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause then if they could cross-sell each one of those to just one other title, wow, they've doubled their sales. Or, you know what I mean, they've gotten 20 more sales versus they get me to buy one more book. So there are different ways they could be thinking about how to be selling these things, how to be marketing them, and part of it is they're so far down the road of everything going to trade. We're seeing a lot more with digital. We're starting to see day and date release of many things. Archie's announced it on a few things. I think Marvel and DC have both announced it on a few things. And, I mean, how that's going to play out is going to be interesting to see. I don't think they've got the price point right to be leeching away a lot from the print stuff. I think the $1.99 price point is too high for digital. I think it's got to be 99 cents or lower. But I think if they can really kind of finesse that business model, that could be a game changer too, for a certain portion of the audience. I personally still like my Dead Tree editions. So,
I heard on NPR, they were talking, I think it was in Europe, but they were talking about hardback editions and how in the book market, hardbacks, not softcovers, but hardbacks are outselling everything else in Europe right now.
Interesting.
Because people
surprised
just,
by that.
People, well, they're trying different textures and paper and different, you know, different sizes and different binding, you know, so it feels better in your hand, you know, and all these different and different trade dresses and, you know, dust jackets and everything, more creative, and it's working. So.
I really think publishers on comics ought to be thinking about some of that.
Yeah.
There is something to be said about the tangible aspect of a really comfortable book.
Mm-hmm.
And that can really
change. That's a great blog topic for me. Thank you. That's a great blog topic for me. Thank you.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's something that a lot of people say, oh, who cares? I mean, there is a feel to a book, and some books are literally more comfortable to read than others. And there are a couple of books. I mean, I was thinking about getting Super Freakonomics. It's only in hardcover. I'd rather get a paperback. But it's also in the hardcover, got that jagged edge kind of a thing. It's like, I don't want that.
Yeah.
I don't like the feel of it. But there are a couple other books I've seen in the past where just literally the feel of the cover, the way the pages, you know, felt and moved and whatnot, I found pleasing.
I'll tell you what, I've been talking it up for a couple years now. The omnibus formats that IDW and Dark Horse have been doing, the 6x9 mm-hmm. format, those are really fun. You know, they're easy to read, they're easy to hold. Yeah, the comics are scaled down, but they're not unreadable, you know, and it's just a little easier in your hands.
Well, in terms of the smaller scale, I remember when I was younger reading a lot of the Digest stuff where they would take some of the Kirby, Lee, Fantastic Four stuff and kick it into literally a little Digest size. So it was half the size almost. And it was still very readable. If you've got the right printing resolution, you're good. So,
well, and Kirby only did 6 panels, so it's pretty easy to read, yeah.
There is that, too.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something to be said for you know, not having one of these gargantuan editions. I got right. the... actually, I don't know if it's in here. Is the Usagi hardcover in here?
Oh, from Fantagraphics?
Yeah.
You got that?
I got that. Let's see. I didn't even think to sales. Yeah, it... $100,
yeah,
it's at rank 183.
183, all right.
It did 687 units. I can account for one of them. that thing is a two hardcover slipcase deal. It is heavy.
Yeah.
And at some point I'm going to enjoy going through it, but that's one of those, if I got to make sure I got a sturdy enough table to set it on to where it doesn't just collapse the damn thing, you know. Don't want to drop
awesome.
That on my foot or something, I'll break it. But I'm looking forward to that. But if it had been in a lighter... I mean, like the trades for Usagi from Dark Horse
mm-hmm.
are a little bit smaller than a Marvel or DC trade, but it's a good form factor. It looks like it would be a comfortable book to read. So that's something that, again, I think some of these publishers could leverage... The tangible aspects of the collected editions a bit better.
Right.
And I think there's an opportunity there for a publisher to really kind of make a name for themselves, good, bad, or indifferent, by doing that. Of not just, well, okay, let's go for the standard paper, standard cover, thump, it's out there.
Mm-hmm.
But actually have something that's a little bit different and do that for material that justifies it.
Right.
So.
Is that a limited print?
I thought it might be, but I'm not
yeah,
sure.
1,000 copies, maybe, or something like that.
I
have to look into that.
Yeah, $100, don't know. But
yeah, that looks really nice.
Yeah, I was glad I got it. So anything else you want to talk about in here, or does that pretty much do it?
No, I think we had a good show, yeah.
Cool. So what do you got coming up on your show?
Well, it's a new year, John, and I have changed my format to the CCL. It's going to primarily be an interview show from now on.
Oh, cool.
And it's going to be running every 2 weeks.
Okay.
And that way it allows me to do more writing with my blog and some other activities that include activities outside of comics, if you can believe that or not. You know.
I can believe that. I mean, yeah. Podcasting takes time. Interview shows take time to set up and to do. So doing the two-week format, that makes
yeah.
It's a good shift.
It's pretty cool. I've got the editor from Classic Comics Press coming on to talk about his stuff, like The Heart of Juliet Jones and Big Ben Bolt. That'll be an upcoming show, and I still hope to get somebody from DC, but not yet, for a special interview. So but that should be coming up.
Cool.
What about you?
Well, let's see. We got the usual. Bob and I are going to be talking about the comic sales, such as they were. That'll be interesting, because, again, not so great, as we talked about a little this episode. Let's see. When this goes up, it will... Okay, the well, the weekly comic spotlight before, because this will go up on a Wednesday, the Monday before, we will have talked about Steel, Thanos Imperative, Devastation, Erp, Saints for Sinners. I haven't read those yet as we record. And we actually need to pick stuff for the next couple of weeks. We haven't actually picked what we're going to do for the remainder of January, really, but we've got that information available. So at this point, not quite sure. We're obviously going to try to get a year-in-review episode done for the Mayo Report, talking about kind of the year-end sales. Hoping to get a few more pieces of information before I do some serious number crunching in terms of, particularly if the book scan data gets leaked, because that's always very interesting to look at.
Mm-hmm.
But we pretty much have a full slate of episodes for the remainder of the month, which is, on the one hand, great. On the other hand, very time-consuming to put these together and edit them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good stuff all the way around.
Good deal.
So, cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themayoreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why, or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of the top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales to competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond's comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.